I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 132 of Digital Divination.
Ooh, that's nice. I, Ron Lundeen, am an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
Hooray.
Hooray. Right. All right. Most excellent.
What are we actually going to talk about now?
Well, we can talk about some of your opinions, some of Jason's opinions, and some of my opinions.
That's all of us here. That's kind of all anybody ever gets. Yes. Three opinionated guys on Digital Divination.
Well, you know, Starfighter 2nd Edition is coming out, and they're slowly doing the drip campaign of stuff that's coming out. But I don't know of anything new that was announced here since our last episode. So
we're going to see that galaxy guide real soon, I'm sure.
Yes. I won't say more about seeing it soon. Okay. But yes, it should come out April.
Yeah.
That's next week.
Yeah.
That's right. For when we are recording now, April is in 2 days. But by the time people hear this, it's already April because they're living in the future.
So the galaxy guide
this month.
All right. But until we get the galaxy guide to look at, in which case we can talk about it, how about we talk about all the things that we're looking at doing now, between now and when Starfighter 2nd Edition launches in August? So what other games maybe we're interested in?
Like what's tiding us over?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Jason, what's tiding you over?
All right, I'll start then. Fair enough. I have like a every Wednesday group that plays tons of different stuff, and a lot of, you know, half the time we're playing stuff that we've, you know, we're playtesting for ourselves or you know, newer games that, you know, we're working on. And half the time, the other two thirds of the time, we're just trying out different things because, you know, we got a lot of we've been doing this for like 12 years now or something crazy. I just started one of my campaigns. I think I get to run like three times a year, rotating wise. And what I've started was a game of Triangle Agency. Goes across my face.
Okay. You've shown this off before. Tell me more.
It's a lovely hardback. It is a very strange role-playing game by Haunted Table Games. And so I don't know if any of you have ever played the video game Control.
I have not.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It is by the people who made Alan Wake and Max Payne and some other games.
Yep. Okay.
In fact, that's now all those games are basically now in the same universe if you have been paying attention. Anyway, Control is about a building in a city where this woman goes in to find her brother, I believe, mysteriously disappeared and whatever. And it's the head of the control agency. It might have a different name, but it's like some agency is there. And then she goes in and basically something happens and she becomes sort of part of this company. She actually becomes the CEO, the president of it, kind of like through weird mystic and sci-fi nonsense. But then things start going wrong, and basically then this agency it deals with controlling these weird anomalies that happen, like and the building is just basically sort of like breaking out and all the things are escaping. It's a little bit like I don't know if you're familiar with the SCP website. It's the containing protector, whatever it is. It's like that. So Triangle Agency is basically Control the role-playing game, and it is you play people who have superpowers who work for this company, this agency, this corporation that is looking to maintain reality, stabilize it, basically, because things go weird, and it's your job to use your weird superpowers, which come from weirdness, to basically contain the weird things.
Okay.
It is just bonkers in its execution. The first thing you will see in here is a terms and conditions page that, you know, kind of mocks the ideas of, you know, and what you're about to read is highly classified kind of stuff. You know, like at the beginning, it does a thing where the game, what you're about to play is the Triangle Agency's role-playing game initiative. So you're sort of... people who are agreeing to be members of the Triangle Agency who are also playing a game inside the game. And so sometimes it just sort of like uses like little brackets when it says like, you know, the agents / players. And like, you know, basically it's as if, you know, talking to you as a book reader and a game player, and the people who are the Triangle Agency agents who are playing the role-playing game initiative.
That's zany.
It's very, very zany. It's very weird and meta. There's art in here that's just off the wall. You know, we talk about the superpowers that you have. Here's a you know, one of them is just called the Whisper. The picture of that is a weird like Garfield phone with like a human mouth in the phone piece.
Right.
One of the power you can pick is one of the powers you can pick is just called gun. But it's a mystical, it's a magic gun because the picture of the gun is a rock. There's a lot of stuff like that. And it does one of the just so many weird and unique things. You pick that, you pick like sort of like where you work in the company outside of being a field agent. Are you like basically, you know, work for R&D? Do you answer to hotlines? Do you basically some sort of janitor, you know, that kind of stuff? Are you a CEO? CEO is one of the basically things you can pick. And that sort of gives you sort of things that you need to do. You know, the game runs on commendations and demerits that you get in field work, and those are basically sort of like XP and whatnot.
Yeah.
There's a heavy Severance vibe to some of the stuff in here too. Okay. Stuff is named weird. At the end of every mission, if you're the most valuable player, you have the most commendations, you get to wear, your character gets to wear the socks of success for the next mission. There's just like this whole like work-life balance stuff where you put your XP kind of, I don't want to go too much into explaining it, but like, it gets into some stuff. And then the GM part of the book is, sort of also breaking that fourth wall. Something is going on weird inside the agency that's talking to you like, oh, don't be a sucker. Don't work for the agency kind of stuff. Like, this is how you're supposed to run a game. And all of that is sort of, builds into the point where, what they have in the back of the book are called playwalled documents, instead of paywall, playwall, that you unlock by playing the game. So there are points in the game where that just says, go see document A2. And you're not supposed to read that document until you've gotten to that point.
Okay.
So you read that document and you go, oh, this is more whatever. So there's like bits of, there's actually literally mechanics in here that don't make any sense until you've, that you don't use until you've unlocked it in the book by essentially like
legacy board games, right?
It's a little bit like legacy board games. If you're not tearing, ripping, you know, you can always go back. But it is a sort of a situation where like, yes, if you know what it is, then you can go for it. But you're technically, you know, I guess every campaign, because like as you spend, if you get these XP, these little XP tracks, if you fill the stuff in, one of the boxes will just say K2 and you filled it in. Oh, now I can go look at K2. Oh, and here my power just got better. I get a fourth use of my power, whatever it is, and here's what it is, right? And then there's a bunch of other. I haven't actually looked at all the playwall documents because I'm not supposed to. But yeah, there's basically stuff like, you know, what happens if your agents fail too many times and reality ends? Here's a whole thing in the back that describes how you're supposed to sort of do that in game. And then like everyone signs the form letter that says, I messed up a whole bunch and it is my fault that reality is. And it's very Severance. You know, I admit that it's my mistakes, and even the GM has to sign it. Weird stuff. it's the game runs on a 6d4s. Anytime you do anything, essentially, you roll 6d4s, and you
That's
want
triangles.
To get in triangles, and you want to get threes. You don't have necessarily like any way to get better at a thing. They roll more dice or get threes, you know, on different numbers. It's always you want number. You want a number, total number of threes. But
Wait,
what you do
not,
better
not
is,
three or better.
No, four it's just
is
three.
No good. Mean, just
four is no three. Good. Four is as bad as one. You just want okay. the number three. If you get three threes, it's the whole thing. What you get is uses basically rerolls of the dice. That's a way if you get better at something, you can reroll those dice more. Hmm. And the thing that's been difficult, I kind of played like a training mission for last Wednesday mm-hmm. where they just sort of were like, here's an anomaly and you know, whatever. And you're supposed to like keep like say Vampire the Masquerade, you kind of have to keep the public from not knowing things. So there's loose ends. You can get loose ends. Anytime you roll the dice, basically it generates chaos and the GM gets to spend chaos to do specific things to mess up the mission or whatever. But anyway, the one thing that they discuss, besides the idea of like you having these superpowers, I think the way that they say it is that failure is guaranteed. If you try to do something, it seems like if you want to try to do something that you would do normally in a role-playing game, this is the stuff thing I'm having a difficulty sort of wrapping my head around. You will fail. You don't get to roll the dice. But if you want something to happen similar to that, you basically, you know, you ask the agency for help and then sort of describe a series of events that could feasibly happen to make that thing occur. For instance, instead of me pickpocketing someone to steal their ID card to get into the building, right? I go, well, what if he just accidentally leaves it behind and then I can just pick it up? That's obviously something I can do. When I say failure is guaranteed, it's failure to do anything complex, failure to do anything you would normally do. Like normal stuff is, you know, you can walk around and talk to people and stuff like that, right? But if you want to do something that you would normally maybe roll a skill check for in another role-playing game, you don't. You have to do
you
this
don't.
Other stuff.
You fail.
You fail. So you have to think about like, okay, well, how do I get him to leave? I've seen it. It's in his jacket. So if he leaves his, drops his jacket and forgets about it, well, we'll cause him to forget his jacket. Well, maybe, I don't know, something happens to it and it gets damaged to the point where he takes it off and has to run to the hospital or something. Oh, he gets acid spilled on him. You know, gosh. Okay, so where the acid is going to come from? Oh, there's a scientist who's coming out of the building. You know, so you have to like try to think of like some Rube Goldberg set of events and then sort of be like, okay, now, then you roll the dice to see if it happens, basically. So it's okay. The way I've realized, I was just thinking about it earlier today, actually. The way I think the realize is that the character is not organizing that event, those series of events. The player is. So you have to kind of have player character knowledge sort of separate. The character is just like, I'd like to get a hold of that jacket. And then things happen and they get a hold of that jacket. Whereas the player has to go, what about this? What about this? And then, you know, all the other players can help to come in. And the more reasonable it sounds, the sort of like less difficult it is for, you know, oh yeah, I need this many threes to make it happen, right? I might not like use that exactly when I'm running it because it takes up a little bit of time and I've got like, you know, seven players and, you know, and they wow. always come up with interesting things to do any like interesting ways to do things anyway, like no matter what game we're playing. It's just why this group barely interacts with rules because there are eight of us total. And we only play for about 2 hours. And because most of the other people are on the East Coast, so, you know, they're going to, you know, 10, by 10 o'clock their time, you know, the game is pretty much over. The session, I should say. And so, you know, and they're always like, what about wacky this and this stuff, wacky this? And most of the time, it's just like, everyone's just like, well, we don't want to roll the dice to see if that works. That should work. That's hilarious. It should just go. Let's just do it. So that kind of stuff. But it is, you know, it is an interesting game, an interesting something to think about. I would love to. It's one of those games that the problem is that I love games that everyone who I play with them should also read the book to get the feel for the game, right? Unknown Armies is like that. Some other games that I have that are like that. And I don't always get to play with the people who also have the book and who have read the book and know basically how the game is meant to work or stylistically how the game is meant to be played. This is one of them. I still think it's pretty cool, and I'm definitely gonna, you know, I'm always thinking about what the next thing is. You know, what weird thing are they gonna come up with, right?
Have you played or seen? I think it's Monty Cook Games, Stealing Stories for the Devil.
No,
this,
I haven't.
This reminds me a lot of that. The thing about stealing stories for the devil is that you also have superpowers because you're from like the 34th century and you've come back to the modern day because you, there's a thing you have to steal. Mm-hmm. You come back into the past, and your ability to alter reality is limited by whether you can alter like people's perceptions or whether you can alter physical things or whether you can alter events, right? Like you've got, oh, you got this, like you were talking about, oh, we need to get this key card for the guard, right? Well, if you're a sort of an event altering thing, well, you know, that guard caught the flu or whatever and got really hot and left the jacket over the chair. And if you're sure, a people alterer thing, if you're, you know, if you're a thing alterer, then the door you need to get into is somebody left it unlocked anyway. You don't even need the key card, right? That's right, just part of the storytelling that you do in order to have all these zany things happen. It's reminding me a lot of the same kind of vibe. It is also, as you say, the kind of thing that maybe works best when everybody's read at least the player part of the rule book to get sort of the vibe. But I found that one to be a ton of fun. And I loaned my copy to someone and I don't know who.
But you're out there, give it back.
What's me?
I don't know. I don't, you know, if somebody's going to enjoy a game, let them enjoy it. I'll just go get another copy. But one of the things that I played recently that was a lot of fun, I was out at GaryCon, which was an amazing convention. It was my first time out at GaryCon in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. I came in at the very last minute. I was going to go to GameStorm with my good friend Mark and some other guy. And anyway, that's John. John is the other guy. Anyway, but I got called in to work basically at GaryCon, which was a ton of fun. They were all very, you know, the people that were hosting it were great. And I got to sort of meet a lot of industry people. I lived in the Midwest for several years, so I got to meet some friends that I hadn't seen in a while who happened to be going to the convention as well. But while I was out there, I bumped into an industry contact I know and was mentioning that, oh, I was going to go to this other convention in Portland until I got called here. And at that other convention, I was going to be playing Shadow Dark for the first time because I've been interested in that sort of old school revival, you know, but modern sort of design thinking for the dungeon crawling game Shadow Dark. Mm-hmm. And he looks at his watch and he's like, I'm actually supposed to be in a pickup game of Shadow Dark right now. Do you want to come along? I'm sure they can get you in. And not only was it a pickup game of Shadow Dark, but its designer, Kelsey Dion, was actually one of the players as well.
Wow.
Whipped up a character, which is very easy. Your characters end up being very thematic as well. I thought I'd be safe in a game called Shadow Dark playing a dwarf, but it turns out nobody, not even dwarves, can see in the dark in a game called Shadow Dark. You need to keep light around you, on you, because terrible things lurk in the darkness of the dungeon. In our case, the darkness of the dungeon was in like an old glacier, and there were like these entombed walrus people and these strange runes and this dragon that was going to destroy the entire place that was descending. So there's this sense of inevitable doom while we're trying to figure out what we're supposed to be doing. It was great, like beginning to end. I found it was simple mechanics, but the mechanics were, you know, roll the D20 like you would know for any D20 style, you know, running around in the darkness game. But one of the, there are a ton of like weird tables that you roll upon, maybe not as many as Dungeon Crawl Classics, which is another OSR game that's just chock full of weird tables. But strange events that sort of, can sort of arbitrarily change things while still within the deep, in a dangerous dungeon kind of vibe. I thought it was a ton of fun. I had a really good time with Shadow Dark.
Did you die?
I did not die. Mm. The character that got wounded that I was picking up and trying to carry over to the character that could heal him died while I was carrying him, did not make it over. So I'm like, here, heal this person and dump what proved to be a corpse on the ground. And then I'm quickly doing some fast talking. I'm like, no, he was totally alive when I picked him up, I promise.
Well, yeah, I just found out today that there's a local game store up here that is recruiting folks who might be interested in playing Shadow Dark on Saturday or Sundays. And I said, well, you know, I generally I keep Saturdays free for family stuff. And Sundays I have a game every other Sunday, including today with my good friend Ron here. So, you know, if it works off that schedule. So sure enough, next Sunday, we're going to have a introductory session zero to Shadow Dark. Oh, and I'm awesome. Not going to play a dwarf expecting it to be able to see in the dark. So
wise.
Do something else. Oh, cool. Yeah. So at this same convention that Ron was supposed to go to, and he bagged on us for this important work.
I got called away for work.
Yeah, I said that. I said that. Now, I went there to run some Starfinder. So I ran one of my adventures, and I played some Pathfinder. But I was also looking for other games to play. And in particular, I really wanted to play City of Mists, because in another game that Ron and I are in, later on this spring, I think in May, we're supposed to start a City of Mists campaign.
Mm-hmm. No, it's like, I can correct you there. It's June.
June, because okay.
He wants to end everything by June 11th when the new Superman movie comes out.
Oh, yes, and
when
the new
Superman movie comes out, immediately start running a superhero campaign.
Right. Yeah. So City of Mists is a superhero type of campaign, a game. It's runs on the Powered by Apocalypse system. So it's 2d6, basically. And 1 through 7 is a failure. 8 through 10 is a success and partial success, something like that. And then 11 up is a full success. And you get modifiers based on abilities you might have or other circumstantial things. And what's really interesting about City of Mists, in which are Jason, a different Jason, is likes about is the fact that it kind of brings in the superhero part of you and your civilian part, and both of them play big roles as you're going about growing as a character, but also solving problems and missions and things like that. Now, and stuff I didn't know talking to Jason and learned a little bit about at the convention. So the notion of City of Mists is that there's this mist that's coming in that's causing mythologies basically to start forming amongst individuals in the city. And not everybody gains these sort of mythos abilities, the superhero abilities. Some people might gain them, and they had a name for them. It's something I can't remember the name. It's like just people that are on the verge of maybe making that change, but they aren't. Mm-hmm. And the idea, though, is that there's this mist here. In certain areas where the mist is really thick, there's a lot of folks that have these special abilities, and a lot of crazy things happen there. And then when it's not so thick, there are fewer people. And the media doesn't really pick up all these strange happenings. Like, you know, when, you know, somebody launches a big fireball because of an ability, the media said, you know, takes that as, oh, there was a, you know, a gas main explosion kind of thing. So there's, you know, so the nature of the mist obscures the fact that there's these things happening in the mythos that you can have. So like my character had two mythos and two logos. So two superpower cards and two regular person cards. And my mythos was Rumpelstiltskin. So he had certain abilities, like one of the upper abilities that I didn't get. You do enough things on your abilities, you can kind of level up, so to speak, some abilities. So the next level of things would have been to be able to spin things into gold, basically, you know, create gold. Mm-hmm. But the basic level stuff is I could mysteriously enter any locked room. I could magically unlock, fasten things, stuff like that. And on my logos parts, I had been a kind of like a mafia, a wannabe mafia head in charge of a small, you know, like a small crime lord in a small city, into gambling and stuff. But I had gone away, gotten caught for whatever reason, gone to jail for number of years, and I was just coming back. Now my whole goal was to try to reclaim that station I had before. And the interesting thing about City of Mists is that you can switch more into your logos, more into your civilian life if you focus a whole lot there, or more into your mythos side if you focus a lot there. And if you focus too far, if you become all mythos, so you have four different things of mythos, right, then you no longer, the player can't play you anymore because you've become Rumpelstiltskin and now you're a villain that's in the world, right? Oh. Or if you go all the way to the other side, so you all four of your cards you have become your logos, your civilian side, well, now you no longer have any special abilities and you don't even know about them. The mist obscures them. Now you mm-hmm. become a full-time civilian.
And so your person is like, oh, it must have just been a gas leak, right? Because
right.
you're not believing any of the mythical
things. And it must have just been a dream, the fact that I thought I could spin, you know, straw into gold and things mm-hmm. like that. So it's kind of interesting. And one of the things about the mechanics is that your mythos and your logos, so your civilian and your super side, each have different abilities that may come into play given the circumstance. So like, for example, we were investigating a missing person. And so in the investigation, right, it might be that my character knows a certain neighborhood, so I could get a additional plus one because I had this ability of knowing a certain neighborhood, right? Maybe I, because of my mythos, I might have some intimidation factor or something. Well, I might get a plus one for that. And depending on how you interpret your abilities on whatever problem you're approaching, you could have between, you know, zero and, you know, you could have six or seven or a lot of plus ones to add on to your 2d6 to push that success rate, the likelihood of success
up into the much higher success at cost or full success.
Yeah. And okay. One of the issues, I think, though, is that how you interpret those special abilities. So, you know, in the game I was playing, there were a couple of folks that had played City of Mists a lot, and they had played particular characters a lot, and they drew all kinds of connections that were tenuous at best to get the mm-hmm. additional plus ones. And I think that goes kind of against the notion of having so many different characters, so many different abilities. You really should be limited. I mean, you shouldn't be able to do everything for everything all the time and all problem solving, yeah. right? And so a lot of it depends on how strictly you adhere to things and how much the GM does stuff. And the GM can add in additional factors like, you know, if you're interrogating somebody, well, that person's maybe nervous, so they might get a plus one, or maybe they're agitated or angry with you. Maybe you get a minus two to your role. And so you can mm-hmm. do other things to help kind of adjust that. So it was nice to kind of learn the system, roughly how it works. And I'm really looking forward to now June 11th, so we can watch the Superman movie together and then go roll our superhero characters and get started.
Do you get to choose what your mythos is, or do you like roll that randomly or what?
So when I played, the person had the expansion set, so I had lots and lots of pre-gens, and they were right, all thematic. Yeah. And on the pre-gens, you know, you have four kind of categories of cards, and you can have between one to three of mythos or
right,
logos, yeah. so civilian. So you could be either even back and forth or swayed one way or the other. We will generate our own and create our own mythos, our own logos, probably to set a certain theme. It's a little more complicated, right? Because you got to do the themes and then the specific abilities and mm-hmm. and how you kind of do that. But then it becomes much more like your character at that point. So
sure, yeah, definitely. You have pre-gens. I'm just wondering if there was like a menu to choose from, or what if there was actually you get to. Sounds like you get to just sort of create them, which is great.
Yeah, you just that. I think there's some standard ones you could choose from, but you are. I think you're encouraged to create them. You know, whatever they are, special abilities and things like that. So, yeah. So that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Fun.
Neat.
So,
I remembered another game, by the way.
Go ahead.
That I want to tell the two of you about, because I know you'll probably be interested in this idea. Right now, John Harper is this is a playtesting thing too, is playtesting Blades 68, which is Blades in the Dark setting, right? And and obviously the mechanics, sort of like time shifted forward, because Blades in the Dark kind of has this, you know, medieval fantasy situation. Time shifted forward into a 60s kind of setting. So it's more, it's not modern exactly, but it is more modern than the original setting. And it looks like, you know, I haven't actually like downloaded the playtest yet and checked out all the things, but it tickles my fancy. I'll tell you that.
That could be kind of neat.
Yeah. Well, our Jason was talking about a Blades in the Dark system, Forged in the Dark system for time. Remember the time shifting, time guardian kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was his idea from, we talked about that a while back too. We had some chats about it.
Yeah, where you were convicts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. Right. It's good. Right.
I mean, I know he can't because he's, you know, working for Wizards, but I really liked him to throw that out there.
Yeah, he'd actually reached out to the publisher of the Blades in the Dark system, who's in what country? Sweden or something?
I don't recall.
Or maybe Czech Republic or somewhere. Yeah.
I never really thought about where Evil Hat is based.
Somewhere not here is all I know. Yeah, and they were talking back and forth, and then I think they both got busy. So, but yeah, he mentioned he really wanted to put something together like that.
This is probably around the same time that I was putting together my Weird Western Forged in the Dark game, and we were sort of chatting
ideas
about
off of each other.
Throwing ideas, yeah.
I like the system. I think it's fun.
Yeah. One of the games that I've only had the opportunity to play a couple of times, but I like, is a time travel game called Continuum.
I feel like we keep talking about this.
I think we do. But one of the ways that I want to loop back to one of the things you were saying earlier about the sort of the meta nature of the Triangle Agency is that one of the things about the Continuum rule books is they insist that they are being written from the future in order to be a role-playing game that people play today, because time travel is about to become a thing that everybody knows about within unspecified but not very many number of years, they say. And in order to prepare humanity to accept the reality of time travel, they've seeded all kinds of media, movie, books, and now role-playing games with time travel so people can kind of get their minds around the concept before time travel becomes a well-known reality for humanity. So I thought that was kind of a clever sort of meta piece for that game that matches something like the meta piece that the Triangle Agency is trying to do.
If the future time agencies are trying to get us used to the idea of time travel, they should have maybe done a slightly simpler system than Continuum.
I think that's right. I think that's probably right. Maybe they seeded all the other time travel games, RPGs.
Yeah, Time Watch is one I can think of. A couple other ones.
Yep.
Well, that seems like there's plenty of other games to play out there between now and Gen Con. And of course, we're still going to continue with our playtest.
Yep.
So, you know, we'll be getting that knocked out. But yeah, I'm pretty excited. Excited for the new games. It's one of the things that I'm liking, but also really excited for Starfinder 2nd Edition in its final form to come out and so we can start playing that. So, and for Jason to run Murder Metal City. I'm really excited about that.
You're going to say that I'm doing that every episode until I actually start doing it, right?
Well, you know, just to make sure that you put the screws to whoever needs to develop the Foundry modules for you. That's all.
I'm sure it's probably happening.
I hope so.
I mean, it's a deluxe box, so yeah, why not make a deluxe thing? I mean, we did all the beginner boxes and stuff like that, so yeah.
I feel like the relationship is not such that people at Paizo are spending a lot of time putting the screws to the people at Foundry. It feels a lot more collegial than that.
Yeah, no,
it definitely is. I just got to go talk to someone who does work for Paizo who talks to the Foundry guys, who is... I gotta say, in a game that I'm running, that I just started running, also running a couple weeks, a Pathfinder game. So you know, hey,
so easy.
Over Foundry. Yeah. So
well, I'll just sort of
seed a little like, hey, are we doing Murder in the City?
Sooner than later, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think the question was asked, and it sounded like, yes, that sounds like something we would do, which tells me that probably they're working on it, but who knows if it'll be at launch.
That's a lot of stuff. They're going to have to get the whole Starfinder 2nd Edition in there, basically. I don't know. I wonder if they're going to do – this is completely off topic. I wonder if they're going to do it as a sort of add-on to the Pathfinder sort of module or start – have a whole other –
game like system. If they're going to duplicate it and recreate a new
its own thing, because there will be differences. Well, yeah, because when you do Foundry, you pick a system to open the world into, right? And you can pick there's so much stuff out there that people have made for that, and some of it works better than others. And I think probably Pathfinder 2nd Edition might be the thing that works one of the best, that has the most support in Foundry, because it has a lot of official stuff in it.
Right. Well, yeah, it probably depends on how easy it is to kind of bring the system in versus if they have to do standalone.
I don't know. I feel like duplicating it might be smarter because both of the games are going to continue on their own trajectories, which might not be the same. It's the, one of the games might develop an archetype issue, which is a... if I can go back to the mists of early Pathfinder First Edition, it was pretty much a continuation of 3.5 D&D. But then by the Advanced Player's Guide for Pathfinder First Edition, they came out with the idea of class, like archetypes that you take to like pivot the way your character works. It's not prestige classes, it's something else. That was kind of a new thing. And the whole system ended up kind of counting on that architecture. At that point, it really deviated and kind of became its own thing. So I think that if Foundry existed at the time and was like, well, you know, should we make Pathfinder its own thing or just kind of a 3.5 thing? No, you would have been smarter to make it do its own thing, because then it developed its own very robust system with a lot of independent rules. And I think there's going to be a little more tightness between Pathfinder 2nd Edition and Starfinder 2nd Edition, but I still think that there's going to be enough deviation that it would feel like I'm going to pick a different system. This is in pure speculation on my part. I don't know anything one way or the other about how Foundry even does those modules. Yeah. But
Well, we will see. I mean, right now, how Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest is, it runs under the Pathfinder module. So,
and you can, and I found in advancing a character, you can easily sort of suddenly fall into, suddenly I'm in the vast sea of Pathfinder 2nd Edition options.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. Well, I mean, you know, for the playtest, you technically need to use player core
and you do
core to run it, so it doesn't have all the rules in it, but Starfinder core will stand alone. So I think maybe the Foundry module most likely.
Let's hope so. We'll find out and tell our viewers as soon as we can.
We'll know because we'll be playing it, right? Is that the
maybe all right. I mean, we'll know, we might know beforehand.
Okay.
We might get all the information beforehand.
All right. Well, I think we've covered some interesting ground here, and hopefully we'll be able to pick up with the Galaxy Guide next time if we haven't
talked about it before then.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm John.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason, and this has been Digital Divination.